Five, four, three, two, one.
Alright. Everybody ready? One, two, three. Let's show rules!
Eagles! Showtime!
It's the Living Thing Tech Show, and that's fact. If you don't like the cats, you can skid up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that are linking fast. For the show, let's go to the DLSGS.org. And I see challenges on LinuxX.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the calendar's just about to begin.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and peg walls all over the world. This is Linux Link Tech Show, episode 275. For 375. 375.
We're almost up to 400.
Almost there. 375 for episode for November 10th, 2011. Wow, I'm messed
You're
up tonight. I know. I don't know what's going on, but I'll tell you who's not a mess. Italo is not a mess. He's joining us from Italy to talk about the Document Foundation. How you doing today, Italo?
Well, thanks. I'm waiting to talk to you because for me it's been a long day.
Yes. And we're going to get right into it because I know it's late for you, and we appreciate you hanging out with us tonight with the time difference. But can you explain to us just quickly, what is the Document Foundation and why is it important?
So the Document Foundation was born out of the OpenOffice.org community. You know, the OpenOffice.org project is 10 years old and is one of the largest free software project in the world, and it's now mature. And I think that the community has just grown up enough to be independent. And therefore, we say the old-timers of the community, in different areas of the community, there are developers, there are people involved in native language projects, there are people involved in quality assurance, people involved in documentation, people involved in marketing like me. We have decided that it was time to look for independence, as the project has always been sponsored by one large company. It was Sun, and now is Oracle. And we feel that that was absolutely okay for the first years of the project, but today it's a limitation on the opportunities, and therefore we want to be independent. We want to have a future which is independent from the agenda of a single company. And that's the reason behind the Document Foundation.
So all those fluctuations, changes, and forks and everything going over between OpenOffice and LibreOffice really have no effect upon the Document Foundation?
Actually, the reaction of Oracle has not exactly been the one that we were foreseeing. We have invited Oracle to be a member of the Document Foundation, but they have they've never answered to our invitation. They say they've answered with a press release that was not directly referring to the Document Foundation. So we still hope that there is space or areas of for working together. At the moment, of course, the stability of OpenOffice is guaranteed by Oracle, and we are still working at the first release of LibreOffice, which is going to be, I think, 2-3 weeks after the release of the of OpenOffice.org, because it's going to be based on the same source code, and therefore we need a couple of weeks to implement the changes that we are putting in place on this first release. Although the real changes, if we can call it this way, they are going to come with the next one, so probably in the first quarter of 2011.
So then the Document Foundation also, I assume, goes beyond just OpenOffice, that you look to establish kind of more of a standard that other applications developers could adopt also?
Actually, we had to start somewhere, and therefore, let's say, jumping from the OpenOffice.org project, it was logical to have the product on the same base. But the future that we see is not the future exactly as OpenOffice and as the other office suites are today. Actually, we have released today a press release where we say that we see a future where the user is more in control of the document, and because we feel that office suites have been centered on features for probably almost 20 years now, and users have always been depending, or they have to rely on features which were developed by large companies, and this was of course true for Microsoft Office, but it was quite true for OpenOffice as well. And we want to get to a point where the software is more becomes more a presentation and a creation layer for documents, which is more flexible, and it's able to adapt to different platforms, because the future is not just on PCs, it's going to be on tablets, on netbooks, on smaller devices, more mobile devices. And actually, OpenOffice is, and LibreOffice as well, they're going to be in the region of 12 million lines of code. And it's easy to understand that such a large software will never run well on a tablet, or even on even worse, on a smartphone. While we feel that users in the future will ask for a possibility to read, maybe make changes to documents using this kind of platforms. Of course, each platform will have a different interaction with documents. So you cannot, of course, think about editing a multi-page document on a smartphone just because the screen is too small. Most of the time you don't have a keyboard, a real keyboard, you have a touch keyboard, and this is not really practical. But if you have to read the document and maybe make a couple of changes, even a smartphone is appropriate for that. So we want to push as a future where the software is leaner, is probably more flexible, is probably more customized for user needs than it is today.
I know you guys have started doing builds of LibreOffice, and it sounds
yes.
like all the major Linux distributions are going to be switching over. You know, the different people have blogged about it and posted on Adeniga and Twitter and whatnot. How soon do you think that will actually happen, that you'll actually see LibreOffice supplanting OpenOffice in distributions?
Actually, the Canonical, they have announced that Ubuntu will have LibreOffice starting from the 11.04, so in April of next year. And I know that Novell is working, started working on their flavor of LibreOffice now, so it's probably going to be in their distribution system immediately after the release of the first stable version of LibreOffice. Red Hat with Fedora is probably doing more or less the same as Novell, considering that a number of Novell and Red Hat developers are the core of LibreOffice developers today. So, of course, these two specific distributions have a distinct advantage as the people is working on the same people is working on the code. Debian, we have also Debian people in amongst developers, so Debian is going probably early next year to have LibreOffice. I know that that Mageia people are working on that, but I don't have specific dates. Let's say that probably by mid of 2011, LibreOffice will be in all major Linux distribution.
So it's happening very soon then.
Yeah, quite soon. Yes, definitely yes.
Let me ask you, as far as the core development team, do you have most of your main devs in place? Do you have like a team that's going to, you know, push it along already?
Actually, it's the team is a virtual team. It's not in a single place. That there is people from Novell and people from Red Hat. They were already working on the code. Some of them are former Sun employees, so they all belong. They have been working on the OpenOffice.org project for years, and they have built a. They're custom to work together, even if they're not in the same place. In addition, as the environment is very open to new contributors, in just over a month or close a month and a half, we have around 100 new contributors, which of course are from people committing very basic code to people committing patches or even features. Many people are working at cleaning the OpenOffice.org code because that code, having been developed in Germany, is still contains a lot of comments in German, which are being translated in English at the moment. Of course, this makes easier for people to contribute if comments are in a more known language or in a more popular language like English. And they're also cleaning the code because let's say that there were areas where the code was maintained. So features that were made obsolete were just were not taken away. The code was still there. It was just commented out, and so the code is being cleaned. Because we want to have a more agile platform for the future. And for instance, the Calc engine, so the spreadsheet engine, is going to be partially rewritten. We have a new engine code name Ixion that has been developed by a group of Novell developers led by Kohei Yoshida, who's a Japanese guy living in the States. And that is going to be to replace over time the actual spreadsheet engine, and is going to offer better performances, especially in crunching data and handling data. So let's say database feed, while most of the terms including Office, let's say free Office or pure Office or unique Office, are all trademarked somewhere in the world. So LibreOffice was one of the few possibilities to have a name that was not trademarked around the world, and we have chosen this to avoid conflicts and to be safe under the trademark point of view. Of course, the code has been cleaned up, and the trademark problems are going to be solved by when we will have the first stable release.
I guess what I'm not 100% clear on is the... I know when you talk about the Document Foundation, that it goes beyond... which you had said, it just goes beyond open office. But there seems to be a lot of involvement with open office itself. Where is the line then between the Document Foundation, LibreOffice, open office? I mean, where is that line as to what, I mean, do you guys work really closely with LibreOffice, or are you and you still remain your own entity? Are you guys like sort of connected as just a branch of? But are you? I'm still a little fuzzy on that.
I mean, the Document Foundation is of course was born out of the OpenOffice.org community. So all the people involved in the Document Foundation are former members or are still members, because some of them are still members of the OpenOffice community. You know that some of the people have been, let's say, have been resigned. No, that you cannot fire all here. So they've been put aside or let aside by Oracle because Oracle was felt that there was a conflict of interest, which we were not feeling, and but of course a corporation has a different feeling than volunteers. So at the moment, of course, there might be a feeling that the two organizations are still very close to each other. Although we are building an independent organization, and with time going by, the Document Foundation is going to be a separate entity, completely separate entity from the OpenOffice community. We already have mailing independent mailing list in many languages. We have a site and a wiki. We have already quite a large infrastructure which is completely independent from the OpenOffice.org community. In the future is going to be totally independent and the LibreOffice is going to be a different software from OpenOffice.org. Of course it was impossible to build everything from scratch in a short time, being based probably over 50% on volunteer work, because you have to you cannot work full time as a volunteer. You have to work full time as a different for a paid job, and then you can be a volunteer in your spare time. So of course the process may take some more time than a corporate sponsored foundation, but the idea of the founders is that a corporate-sponsored foundation is not what we really want. I mean, you don't leave a corporate-sponsored project to build another corporate-sponsored project. You leave a corporate-sponsored project to build an independent project, where corporation may be members, but they're not main members, as it is in the case of OpenOffice.org, where Oracle is not only paying most of the development, but is also driving the directions or the future of the software. And this is where we feel that the community wants to have his own position, his own strategy, his own vision, and wants to respond in a better way to users' needs, while we feel that users are not always being the first worry of Sun and of Oracle. They have, of course, corporation have to make their profits. Oracle has always stated very clearly that they want to make a very high profit, and of course this sometimes as not you don't have the same objectives as the community. Volunteers want to make a professional product, a very good product, but they also want to have fun, want to work together. They have different objectives, and you are all from Linux project, you are all Linux user, you know what I mean. It's being a volunteer working at a project because you like it, because you believe in something, is not like working a project because you have business objectives. It's a different story. And the Document Foundation wants to be a good project, but a project driven by users and a project driven by members, not a project driven by corporations.
That makes sense. That's pretty cool. Now, have you received support from companies, like the more proprietary companies like Microsoft or Apple, Google and everything, for support of an open document format?
Actually, Open Document Format is an ISO standard, so it's supported by many companies. It is supported by Microsoft. It is not supported by Apple at the moment, although we hope that Apple will start supporting it because of market demand. In Europe, most countries have recognized open document format as the document format of reference for at least for government purposes, and therefore in Europe it is almost mandatory to support ODF. Canonical has announced that it's going to support us. Google has announced that it's going to support us. Of course, we are we are building the infrastructure, and there will be a time, probably early next year, when we will start talking with these companies for a more structured collaboration. But at the moment, it's probably too early. We need to have a stable software out. We need to have a final structure for the foundation, and with the bylaws for membership, bylaws for sponsorships, which we are discussing and putting together now. We are looking at the bylaws of other foundations with interest, because we don't want to reinvent anything, and we think that there are, for instance, the GNOME Foundation has very interesting structure in terms of sponsorships. We also look at the Mozilla Foundation, of course. We look at the Apache Foundation. There are many examples of successful and independent foundation we can learn from and get an example for the Document Foundation.
Excellent. Well, Italo, I really want to thank you for coming on tonight. I don't want to keep you too much longer because I know it's really late over there.
Don't worry.
Oh, okay. I will not worry.
If you have other questions, don't worry.
The project is fantastic and very important, and yes. I really appreciate all the work you do. How large is the team?
At the moment, there is, let's say, there is a core team of probably around 30 people, but we already have very active supporters in specific areas. As I've told you before, the developers working around the code are almost, of course, they are developers at different levels. There is people just commenting the code in English, and people developing features, but there is probably between 75 and 100 people active around the code, and in marketing there are people almost everywhere already supporting us. For instance, in the States, the OpenOffice.org community has always been very weak, and while we see a lot of interest around the Document Foundation, and we already have more people supporting the Document Foundation with marketing projects than OpenOffice has got in 10 years. And this because we have given those people a chance to organize themselves. You know, the I think that the independence, of course, is not going to be total independence, because that is otherwise is going to become anarchy. But independence attracts people who are willing to contribute. If you ask or put too many rules in between, of course people is not willing, especially volunteers are not willing to get into a project just because they feel they are too much controlled, they are not libre enough, if we can use the term, to contribute to the project. And we already have a on the US marketing mailing list, there are already at least a dozen people discussing and putting together very nice and interesting ideas. And if you look at the, I've been part of the OpenOffice.org project for 8 years now, and I have never seen such an active community around OpenOffice in North America as I'm seeing today around the LibreOffice, and this is, I think, is very positive. But we have people in South America, we have a very strong community in Brazil, we start to build a community in Spain and around the Spanish language, which is big in the States as well. We have the community in other countries is coming together. Of course, it's not a small project. It's not a project that can be just one language or a couple of languages. This is a project that is has been translated into most of the spoken language around the world, and the community is probably the OpenOffice.org community was over 10,000 people. It's not easy to migrate such a community or to build such a community in 3 months. Of course, it will take months, maybe years, to get to the same level. But we are talking about user productivity, so this is not something ending up tomorrow. It's something that is staying here for, I can say forever, but at least for another 10 years. So we have time to work, and we appreciate all the enthusiasm, but we want to build the foundation on solid basis, and it takes some more time to start solid in a way that we have a bright future.
So you're looking for people, community members, to help contribute to the foundation right now? And if so, what can they do?
I think that the easiest path is to go to the Document Foundation, which is documentfoundation.org website, and on that website you can find all the different areas where you can contribute. You can find the mailing list addresses, a way to subscribe to mailing lists, and I think that inside mailing lists you have most of the ideas coming out at the moment. You can follow the foundation. We are actually having steering committee conference calls, which are public and are once a week. The next one is in 2 days, is on Wednesday, on Friday, is at 2 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. And so it's early morning in the States, but this way we can have Asia as well, and the conference is open to the public. Everyone can dial in and listen to the discussion. Minutes of the conference call are public, so I think it's quite a transparent process we are building up, and getting into the into the project is quite easy. There's nothing to sign, there's nothing to do. You have just to subscribe to a couple of mailing lists, follow a little bit to understand what happens, and then start contributing. If you want to contribute, there are specific mailing lists. Developers, people coordinating development, and you can ask them which is the best path to start coding or hacking around LibreOffice. And I'm not an hacker, but so I cannot give you a flavor of what is happening, but I see from fellows Italians that are committing patches, this is a very open environment, and they have a lot of fun working around the code.
Excellent. Well, Italo, I appreciate you coming on tonight. We thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
The Document Foundation is a really important project, and you know, thank you for taking on the responsibilities. You and your team and everybody else for doing that, it's really appreciate it.
Thank you for your interest.
Oh yes, definitely. And you know, if you have anything else you want to say or to throw out to our audience.
No, I think,
you know,
I've described the project quite well, so I don't think it's I have anything to just to remember, the website is documentfoundation.org, and I think that's all. You find every information on that website.
All right. Well, thanks very much. We'll let you get off to sleep because you probably have a busy day tomorrow.
Thank you.
And
okay.
And I hope that the weather continues to be well in Italy.
Yeah. Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Italo.
That was Italo.
Bye.
From the Document Foundation. So what we're going to do now, as typical of the new show format, is play an intermission song. And we'll be back. I don't know how long this song is. I really wish it would preload the duration of the song in there. I don't know. What were you going to say, Joel?
What do you got?
I'm going to play They Pray.
They Pray?
They Pray by Severed Fifth.
Sweet.
Because I'm taking the lazy man way out. So here it is, your intermission song of the week off the Nightmares by Design album. Enjoy, and we will be right back in just a minute. And here we go. going 7 years strong. You love Linux? We live it. You want FOSS? We're gonna dish it out. You like to eat? We have some tips for you. You want crappy audio? Hopefully that's not us anymore. You want the Hoagie Guy? Why would you want the Hoagie Guy? You can have him. Join us each Wednesday night at 8:30 Eastern, 12:30 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time. That's 1:30 Daylight Savings Time for live streaming fun and excitement as we discuss Linux, free and open source software, technology, cooking, movies, games, and anything else our little geeky hearts desire. Between ourselves and with interesting guests from a wide range of backgrounds guaranteed to please. Check us out at tllts.org on how you can catch the stream and be a part of the show via IRC. Can't make the live show? Check out our RSS feeds or download a show from tllts.org. Want AUG? We got it. Want Speaks? We got it. Hate Freedom? We got MP3 too. Woohoo! It's all there, baby. No flack, that's too much. When you're done listening to us, be sure to check out the other fine Linux and tech-related shows over at linuxlink.net. Have a show that's not on linuxlink.net? Drop me a line at dan@linuxlink.net. That's Dan with two N's, double N Dan, @linuxlink.net, and I'll be sure to add you. We hope you give us a listen at the Linux Link Tech Show, and join us as we count down the days to Season 3.
Daddy has a gun!
All right, as you can tell, that was our new promo. What were you going to say, Dave?
I was going to say something.
I don't know. Someone sounded like they were about to chime in there.
Nicely done, nice. Dan. Nice job.
Yes.
Thank you. And we're not above self-pimping. Hold on a second. I got to take a call from my wife. I'll be right back.
Okay. He's got to take a call from his wife. So let's shit on Microsoft, man.
You want to shit on Microsoft? Well, let's stop while we talk about some Microsoft 7 phone, or whatever the hell it's called these days.
Windows Phone 7 is shit.
Yeah, I actually got over to T-Mobile today for a little bit, and for a couple of reasons. I wanted to see if they had the Galaxy Tab, which is quote-unquote officially released on T-Mobile. Unfortunately, they didn't have it at the store. They're not going to get them until Monday, the guy told me. So I couldn't check the Galaxy Tab out, which is the 7-inch tablet from Samsung. It looks supposedly really nice, but it seems to be a little expensive. I think you're saying $399 with a 2-year contract and $599 with no contract. That's a lot of money.
Yep.
Needs to come down a bit. But that's neither here or there. I didn't actually get to see it, so I'm not going to talk about it. Because I haven't actually seen the device in person. But I did see several phones in person. And before I get to the Windows 7 phone, I saw what the T-Mobile offers now. They offer 4 Android phones right now. They offer the Samsung, which doesn't have a keyboard, which is a very nice phone. It's the same phone that's at the Vibrant, I think, on AT&T. It's the same phone that's like on all of the carriers, just under different names. They have that one there for $199 with a 2-year. They also had the MyTouch 4G, which is the newly rebranded faster phone on their pseudo 4G network. That's $199 with a 2-year contract. And then they also had the G2, which is very similar to the My Nexus 1, except it has a slide-out keyboard. But other than that, cosmetically, it looks very similar to the Nexus 1. So those are the nicer...
And the optical pad on, too.
Right, it's got an optical pad instead of the trackball. And those are the nicer Android phones that T-Mobile has. They also have the Motorola Charm, which is this little Crackberry-esque looking thing, which is only running, I think, Android 1.6, and that's the low-end one. That one you can get for $50 with a 2-year contract. So you can get 4 different Android phones on T-Mobile right now.
Did you say they still have the MyTouch 3G slide, or is that...
4G is what they're carrying.
Is it a slide, though? Do they have the slide model?
No, it's not a slide app.
Nope, it's not.
They're coming out with a slider pretty soon, supposedly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a rev of the 3G design, except it's faster with a little beefier processor. The specs are a little higher, but it's pretty much the same phone. It's a nice phone, don't get me wrong. The Samsung is also very nice also. I like the Samsung. And that Samsung phone, you can get that on frickin' every carrier on the different names. So that's a very common phone. But I got to check out the Windows phone, and it's made by HTC. And physically, the phone looks very similar to the Evo 4G.
I was going to say, it looks like it could almost fit the same cases.
It's the same size. It's got a big-ass screen. It's a really big screen. And it's a beefy phone. It's pretty powerful. And that phone, if it was running Android, would probably be pretty nice. Unfortunately, it's running Windows 7 Mobile. The interface is okay. It seemed pretty responsive and fast. They have this tile interface, which is, it's not horrendous. I could see someone getting used to it, you know. And there were a decent amount of applications on there. But let's be honest, they're not going to have the amount of applications that are currently available on the Android marketplace. I think on the Android marketplace, they've had 100,000 applications already, which is an incredible amount when you think about it. And I doubt Microsoft has anywhere near those numbers in their, I guess it's the Zune marketplace, I guess, is what they get the apps from. And some of the things all on it are really ridiculous. Like, you can't access any of the files through a file browser or anything like that, a file manager. There's all sorts of wacky stuff going on, and this is really wacky. You can't do cut and paste. You know, there's a lot of stuff in there that you could tell it's a version 1.0 system. And you always avoid, you know, the initial release of anything. I don't care what manufacturer it is, what operating system it's running. You try to avoid the very first release because it usually sucks.
Yep.
And the really wacky thing was the issue with the SD card, Joel. I know you're chomping at the bit to talk about that. Give us
a
little background.
Before you get on that. Before you get on that, I don't understand why we constantly have this come up with the copy-paste or cut-and-paste crap. I mean, you...
Yeah, no copy-paste.
Didn't they complain about that with Apple's iPhone? Did they complain about that with the Android?
The iPhone didn't have that. Android had it very early, actually. Earlier than the other
ones. Yes, they
did. I mean, for how long it took them to get Windows Phone 7 out... I don't know. It's just another classic example why freaking Microsoft is just, it's ready to be put in a museum.
Yep.
Of bad ideas.
Yeah.
Now go ahead, Joel.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say,
speaking of bad ideas.
Yeah, this is a
really
bad
idea. What do I
do with the SD card? The SD card is locked to the phone on boot up.
Now it's an accessible. You can access the SD card, right? It's accessible. There's a little way to get in there,
if
right?
You plug it into your, you plug
like
the phone into your laptop, right? But basically, what happens is when you first start it up, it will take the SD card plus whatever integrated storage, if there is any, and format it as one big drive. So if you have an 8 gig integrated on a card, you have 16 gigs on your drive, all right? You cannot upgrade it, according to Microsoft, in that basically if you do, you run the risk of you probably will inadvertently get a SD card that may not be up to specs. So it'll work, but it may be slow and crashy and typical Microsofty. So most of the manufacturers and the carriers themselves are recommending you do not upgrade to storage. To be fair, Microsoft did say there would not be swappable storage in these. But most manufacturers just took, like HTC, took their Android design, like the Evo 4G, and basically repurposed it for Windows Phone 7.
Yeah, it's a nice physical phone itself is nice. Like the Evo 4G is a really nice phone. It's big, you know. So.
See, they're I don't think it's overly big though. I think it's.
Some people
it's not Dell Streak big.
No, it's not that quite that big, Conkin, but it's pretty big.
But yeah. So anyway,
Can you run the phone without an SD card in it, or is it
no?
Required?
You cannot at all. It is required.
Now SD cards, you know, granted SD cards, they're decent, but they're not the most reliable things. I mean, I've had a few SD cards go tits up, you know, in the years that I've been using them. In fact, I just had one go. It was a fairly new card. It was an 8 gig micro SD card. Just no good, you know, anymore. I can't do anything with it. So it
happens.
It
can get corrupted.
Yeah,
sure.
You can replace. You can replace the card on the phone, but doing so requires you to reset it back to factory defaults or something. Yeah, wipe your
kind
that,
of.
That's. I mean, compared
stupid.
To all the other phones out there, it just seems like such a bad idea. What were they thinking?
They weren't. Well, actually, I don't think this is a Microsoft thing. I think this is a manufacturer thing. Although they did say that in the specs that you could have SD cards, they actually specified that the SD card must be by the battery. That's actually in the specification. So basically, you just can't open up or just press on the little, you know, slot on the outside and pop it out while the phone's up and running. You know, I just think it's a bad idea. You know, it's basically Microsoft trying to redefine how we already see SD cards. Everything that's ever had an SD card has had their SD card upgradable or swappable very easily without wiping the card itself. Digital cameras, PDAs, whatever. And they're trying to basically make this change, which I think is stupid. Can't make people
do it.
Yeah,
they're copying Apple so much to the point that they're copying Apple's stupid ideas. And Apple does have stupid ideas sometimes.
But they do them right, though.
I mean, not being able to crack open the phone and, like, change a battery or an SD card, it's got to be one of the most moronic things I've ever heard.
Yeah, but the idea with that is, Pat, is that when your phone is, you know, see you have a 3GS, the 4 comes out, now you want to run out, go get that. So
of course,
your
the idea is to get you
good.
Into the frickin' store so they can frickin' talk into buying something more expensive.
Exactly.
Well, the iPhone has a micro SD card slot on it, yes, that you can remove it.
Yeah, they all have micro SD. That's like the phone standard these days.
Yeah, but iPhone doesn't.
Now, also, the content on the card is encrypted on the
mm-hmm.
Windows 7 phone. If you plug this into a device like your laptop, you can access that card in there, correct?
Nope.
Is that...
Not without reformatting it. You have to format the card.
No, not the card itself. But, I mean, if you plug the phone, obviously has a way to connect USB to a
with the USB,
computer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you plug it in, I mean, does it show up as like a USB mass storage device, or does it require like actually to have Windows to access?
I'm guessing it. Since it's like a Zune, I bet you it would be MTZ, not MTP.
MT, okay.
Not mass storage. So.
Hey, why not, huh? That's what I hate about my Android phone. Every time I take it somewhere and plug it in, it just works. I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, that's too complicated. Nope.
In fact, if I wanted to take the SD card out, pop it in, and throw some stuff on there through a card reader or something, I could do that too. But that's just too much freedom on my part.
Is your SD card and your MyTouch 3G slide by the battery? Like, do you have to take the battery cover off?
Yes, I do. I do. And you know, I just take the cover off, and the card will slide right out. I don't have to take the battery.
I kind of miss that a little bit about my G1. I mean, it had a cover, but you could take it out.
Uh-huh.
You can just pop it right out without taking the battery cover off. I kind of miss that a little bit, but not that much.
Yeah, there's pluses and minuses for that.
Yeah.
Although I will admit, trying to get that little cover off sometimes was a
it
pain
was,
in
was
the
it?
Ass. Oh, man.
A little hinge.
Yeah. Well, trying to get your fingernail on it to pop it open.
The little tab.
Yeah, that little tab. You're just like you're sliding across it all the time. Because I actually had to do that this weekend because I had to... My daughter blitzed her phone.
Uh-oh.
It was causing problems. So I was like, all right, I'm just going to, you know, reflash it with the latest Cyanogen. And It took a couple hours for me to get this thing going, because I don't know what she did with it, but now she was running, she's running the latest Cyanogen, so that's 2.2, and she's got the animated backgrounds and stuff like that. And so, you know what I said, of course, and I'm looking at this, and I'm like, this isn't going to fly, because I was still on 2.1, and I'm like, she cannot have a more up-to-date operating system version of Android on her phone. So I went and I rooted my 3G slide and installed Cyanogen on there. Did you root your 3G slide, Joel?
I don't have a 3G slide. I have a Droid 2 and I have not rooted it yet.
Oh, okay. I'll tell you what. If anybody is considering installing Cyanogen on their phone, number one word of advice, read all the directions first.
Yes.
All right. Read them first.
Android backup.
Because I spent 5 hours on Sunday trying to root my slide, and it wasn't working. And I'm like, I tried the first method, I tried the second method, and I was going back and forth looking through the forums. Finally, the next day on Monday, I was reading on their forums, and I got like, there was like 179 posts on this forum. I got up to like 120, and they're like, well, with the 3G slide, if you install the OTA update, which is over-the-air update, it doesn't work with any of the methods. You have to follow the third method. Dingus didn't read past the first two methods for rooting it. So, once I got down to the third method, when I came home and I rooted my phone, that worked perfectly, and then I installed Cyanogen Mod, the 6 stable version on there, because I wanted to do stable first. What I want to say, though, is I'll tell you what, going for this software more often than not to get like the rooting tools and all this stuff, it's almost like trying to download ROMs and illegal software, because they always keep sending you to these crappy file share places where you either have to sign up. Yeah, you either have to sign up, and then you get some kind of, like, for $29.95 a month, or you have to wait a minute and a half, and then you click on the download, and it's like 127 megabyte download, and it's going at, like, 3 kilobits a second. So, you know, you start it up, and you just wait for an hour to come down, and there's, like, pop-ups and all sorts of garbage going on. It was hellish, but I got Cyanogen Mod on here. I tried to do ROM Manager first, but that didn't really work out for me because it couldn't get the Google apps to come down, and it kept bombing out. So I did it manually. It was, once I got the phone rooted, it was a really simple process. And now I'm running 2.2, and I got the little animated background with the water and the leaves. What really pissed me off about the 3G slide, great phone, and the stock Android that was on there, it was nice, but it was 2.1, and with 2.1 you can't save to the SD card. You can't, like, install applications to the SD card. So I was constantly bucking up against, like, the limits of what I can put on the phone because it kept running out of space. Right. Now I don't have that problem because I have it set to install to the SD card. It seems to be a lot snappier. My only complaint, if I would have to issue my only complaint, well, two complaints. One, this is like a two-part complaint. I backed up my stuff, but the applications that came with the T-Mobile-based applications, you can't install those. Every time I try and install one of those, it pauses the installer, then it kicks it out, and it goes to the Cyanogen splash screen. It almost like restarts the thing. So it's really weird. And kind of like the only two things I wanted out of there was their PDF app, but I don't really need it anymore. But also the desktop weather widget that they had in there was awesome. And I can't seem to find it or replace it with any of the free ones. That is just good, but it was awesome, and I can't get it installed, which is unfortunate. The second thing that kind of, like, I didn't realize this at first, but instead of going to the marketplace and installing my applications, I went to where my applications were that I backed up, and I reinstalled them, and doing it that way does not seem to have it recognized in the marketplace that you have that installed. So if there's updates to those applications, you don't see that through the marketplace.
Yeah.
So I found that was kind of weird. So I ended up having to go to the marketplace, reinstall the apps that I have, even though they're already on there, so that they'd be recognized in the future if there's an update. So that was kind of odd. I don't know how they could actually... I mean, they should be able to fix that or something, but...
That's weird. But... I haven't rooted my phone yet. Yeah. I just haven't done it yet. I think one of the things I'm waiting for is CyanogenMod does not have a build for Droid 2 yet.
Oh, yeah? So, well, that would prevent you from doing it.
There are other builds. In fact, there's a couple that basically... they will basically remove all the crapware that the ROM is rooted and pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. You know, like it would remove like VZ Navigator, which was just recently... I mean, that is a major complaint I got with the Android phones right now, is that the carriers dictate a lot of the software that you have on there if you stick with a standard ROM. And they just had an update to the Droid 2, about a week or two ago. And, of course, when you download the update, now VZ Navigator is installed on my phone, even though it's installable from their marketplace. So it... Plus, then they're playing games with hiding crap from you in the marketplace because, you know, they don't want you to have that program. You know. It's the one thing that I have to say that I think, if it holds out to be true, that Microsoft got right with Windows Phone 7. Microsoft, just like Apple, is controlling when the updates go out and to who. And every phone they have now will take updates to Windows Phone 7 from Microsoft. It's what I read on Wired.
Yeah, that's one thing that I was kind of disappointed in with regards to that. I mean, the slides have been out for a while now, and I know that the original slides supposedly just got 2.2 update over the air,
right,
starting at the end of October, and I'm not sure whether anybody that actually went out and for the 3G slide, they've been talking about it, and I was just like, forget it, I'm going to just root it, put CyanogenMod on there, I'm not going to wait any longer. I want my phone to be my phone, not T-Mobile's.
Yeah. So, we'll see. Microsoft, I think it's good to have competition, but I'd like to see it. I just don't think it's going to be healthy enough to have good competition.
I don't even think Windows, phone, mobile, 7 phone, whatever, can be considered competition at this point.
Yeah, it's early for them. It's a 1.0 release, and the thing is, there's still people that like the Microsoft people, and they're like, oh, it's Microsoft, it's got to be good. I can integrate it with all my Microsoft applications.
The two biggest possibilities, or actually the biggest possibility they have to push this thing and make it huge, is the Xbox Marketplace and being able to buy a game on the Marketplace, buy it on your Xbox 360, play it on your Xbox 360 and your Windows Mobile 7 device right now.
Heck, I've heard through the grapevine that the Evo already has a cooked ROM for Windows Phone 7. But... enough about that.
As you know, Lord D is on, and he wants to give an update for Indiana Linux Fest, which you have exciting news, I take it, yes?
Well, we're in the middle of contract negotiations, so I cannot give a firm date at this point. So I'll just simply go with the tagline that, you know, we've decided to go for the inaugural year, and that's we're beginning our march to freedom. If you go over to IndianaLinux.org, you can see that, you know, what we're got going right now, and we're doing calls for speakers, volunteers, and we're definitely looking for sponsors.
So it's definitely going to be in 2010, yes? 2011. Yes.
Yes, sir.
Awesome.
And so I've spent the last 15 minutes going nuts trying to set something up just for the tech show tonight.
So how much work, I mean, have you put into this a lot? You must be really, you know, busting your ass to get this off the ground and make it a reality.
It's on any given week, I am spending probably 20 hours roughly to get sponsors and negotiating a few other things along the way.
Now, have you received any help or advice from, like, other fests, like the Southeast Linux Fest and Ohio Linux Fest, on how to go about doing this? Has that community been helpful?
I've gotten help from Southeast Linux Fest.
You don't have to lie.
One person's
a little busy and has forgotten to send me some information.
I've not forgotten. I've not compiled it yet because it's not easily compiled. And I'm not singling you out because you're getting more or less the same response from me that I've gotten from the other communities when I've asked the same questions, which is almost no answer. Because I don't think anybody's got, that information compiled. It's almost a year-to-year thing. So that's my excuse, my public excuse, Lord D.
And I don't want to, talk badly about any groups, so I'll say I've gotten some really good feedback and information from some groups, and some groups I have not heard a word back from yet as far as advice or ways to approach things.
It's almost like we need an open Linux Fest project, to just kind of cue all that stuff together, so that people can take it and reproduce it into a different Linux Fest.
In some ways, I think that information, if it became widely available, sponsorship would disappear.
Maybe.
Why is that? Too many people with their fingers or hands out?
Yeah.
So it almost sounds like you have to be part of this exclusive club to get the sponsorship then.
Yeah.
You have to convince them that there's going to be people show up. That's what you have to do.
Oh.
Right.
That's the hard part.
And that actually comes back to what I was talking about, that I spent about 15 or 20 minutes before making this call setting up just for tech show listeners. In part to offer something to the tech show community who's, always been great, and I've gotten a lot of, positive support for this whole project from. It'll also help us get our feet off the ground and show sponsors that, we have a dedicated audience ready to come and see this.
Do you have?
Come on, here I was hoping someone would ask what I'd set up.
That's what I'm wondering. I'm looking on the website, and I was just wondering, what is it that you set up?
Now, the only way this can be accessed is, first, you have to register on the site, because the shopping cart is only available to registered users of the website. And when you go into the shopping cart, I have set up a set amount of coupon codes for Tech Show listeners using the code Tech Show, all in capital. That'll give a $15 discount to them, dropping supporter passes from $65 down to $50. So, that's what I've set up.
Sweetness. Now, here's a question for you. I was just going over to create an account. How come you have two captures on here? Wow.
Because... Well... You shouldn't be getting two captures, but there is Mullum and ReCAPTCHA both set up on there. And it's... I just don't want to have to deal with spammers later.
Uh-huh. That makes sense. Sweet. So do you have any speakers lined up yet?
We've got a couple groups looking to put together talks for our professional talk, which hopefully I'll have more information on when I come back on. But that's part of it right now is I'm, you know, letting everyone know we're starting a call for papers.
Sweet. Now, has it been difficult? Well, I don't want to say difficult, but have you had been able to bank on the old Indiana Linux Fest attendance records to show sponsors that there is an interest?
I've mentioned it to a few, but I've actually had a couple bring it up even before I've mentioned it, and there seems to be very mixed responses about that previous group.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've kind of been careful about who I mention it to because of those mixed responses.
Right. Okay, cool. That's cool. We look forward to hearing the progress as it goes on and keep us up to date. And we'll have you come on in a couple of weeks and discuss the Indiana Linux Fest in more detail. And can you repeat again that deal that you have going on right now and how people can access it? Listeners of the show.
And the website.
Yeah, and the website.
The website is indianalinux.org, and to get access to this deal, you have to be a registered member of the site. I'm sorry, but I, you know, want to have some control over who can access this, and it lets us be able to keep track of, you know, registered users or not. But head on over to the shopping cart. It says registration on the left-hand side of the screen. Choose supporter pass. And in the coupon code, enter Tech Show. Click the, I believe it's apply coupon, and then continue with your checkout, and the discount will be offered on the next page.
Sweetness, we thank you very much.
When do you think you'll be announcing a date and place?
We are hoping by the next time I come on the show in 2 weeks, roughly.
Okay.
We, you know, it's just we're in the middle of negotiating the contract, and I don't want to jump that gun too quickly.
I understand.
You should do it over the same weekend as Southeast Linux Fest.
No.
Stuff it right in their face.
I don't think so.
Those
and I'll leave
elitist
the stuff
bastards.
And things in people's faces to you.
That's right. And I got something I'm going to stuff in Dave Yates' face. Well, thank you, Lord D. We're not going to kick you off, but that's really cool. Well, did you have anything else you wanted
also,
to add about Southeast or Indiana Linux Fest?
Wanted to say that, you know, you guys are, if I'm not mistaken, the only media, one of two media sponsors we have listed on the site right now.
Wait a minute, I saw the first one.
You have to refresh the
Podcast Planet. Get them off of there. What the crap is that? Kind of media sponsor.
Well, the way that the sponsors on that page actually works is it will only show one sponsor of each class when the page loads. And it chooses it randomly from the list. You want to see the complete list, click on the sponsorship level on the left-hand side.
I noticed that a lot of Linux Links not on there. I wonder why. Or Life in Indiana. Or Miscast TV.
I'm waiting for it to come in. I've got someone working on it, so...
It's Klaatu. And we still don't have the self-recordings yet.
Not yet.
Perfection.
They're gonna have.
I guess the only other thing I would have to say about Indiana Linux Fest right now is, like I said, we're taking calls for speakers right now, and you know, if you're interested in volunteering, please head over to the Contact Us section and fill it out, and in the drop down, choose volunteer.
Sweet. Well, thank you very much. You know,
and that coupon code, before I forget, is only good until November 26th.
Hey.
Some people better get moving. You hear that, Joel? Get out that credit card and start purchasing for our listeners.
What credit card?
Hey, you know what? I just went to Oddcast Planet, and I was looking over the list of shows, and I got some bad news. If you click on, and I don't recommend you do this if you're running anything but Linux, if you click on Acrossads link, he's got some malware on there.
Yeah.
What do you mean, yeah, you know? Myself.
No, I noticed it myself a while back.
So, I don't know if he's aware of that, or if he did that on purpose, or what.
Yeah, I think I saw that warning once. I couldn't remember what side it was. I thought it was weird.
Yeah, it's across ads, and if you actually continue to go through and say proceed anyway, it's going to... Well, the last time I did it, it did one of those things that said my computer was infected and said it needed to run a scan and I should download this software. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Anyway.
Hey, you know, I wanted to bring up another thing, if you don't mind. Unless you guys have something that you're chomping at the bit to say, but... Joel,
well,
you had... What?
I had a question for Pat.
No questions for Pat.
The tablets at all?
Well, that's what we were just about to... I was just about to bring up.
Let's talk about it, man.
Yeah.
Man, all I wanted to say, from my perspective, and I don't know... Joe, was it you who posted this review of the Samsung Galaxy tablet on Gizmodo?
Yeah, Gizmodo did a kind of slapdash review of it. And it's obvious, at least from my aspect, from where I sit, that there are Apple fanboys. They basically said it was a train wreck, which I did, you know, not having seen it, I really can't say. But I'm betting it's probably not the train wreck they're making it out to be. But like I said,
Another site that's got a review of the Galaxy Tab is GDGT.com, I believe it is.
They have one? Okay, I haven't seen that. I did see TechCrunch's. So.
Well, I know because I get the newsletter, and they've, you know, said some pretty decent things about it.
Gizmodo also, in their review, kind of totally screwed up the pricing on it, too. They forgot to mention that it would be $3.99 with the contract, and then they are trying to compare it to the $4.99 iPad, which has no 3G in it, but it's just, I think they made so many mistakes in the review on some aspects.
So the Galaxy Tab is more expensive than the iPad?
No, it's cheaper than the iPad with 3G. It's the only way it's more expensive is if you pay outside a contract, and then it's only marginally more expensive than a Wi-Fi only iPad.
But you can't can't buy an iPad out of contract, can you?
Yes, you can. Wi-Fi only.
You can?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. With no Wi-Fi.
And apparently, some Verizon event going on, they've got iPads all over that thing.
Yeah, they have a deal where if you buy a iPad, Wi-Fi iPad, they will give you a MiFi at a special rate. And I think they do something like they do, there's also a similar one on, I think it was Clearwire, where they basically have a MiFi-like device on the Clearwire, but definitely MiFi on Verizon. I'm not sure on Verizon if they lock it like they do. Clearwire actually locks it to only work on Apple devices. I guess it does some sort of scan on the MAC address. But the Verizon one, I'm not sure if it locks it down that hard. But I do know they give you a special rate, which is a lot cheaper than if you just bought the MiFi standalone. So that's what Verizon's doing with the iPad, but I think, you know, there's always going to be the cheap tablets, like the Neuros one, which is, the Neuros one is just one of the Chinese ones, let's be honest. And the,
right.
Then you got, the ones that are higher end, like the Galaxy Tab. And then you have some like the Elocity A7, which is they don't have any 3G in it, but it's I think it's similar specs to the Galaxy Tab. But
I'm looking forward to actually seeing those Arcos tabs. I kind of like what Arcos is planning on doing. Basically, what Arcos is going to do is they're releasing different size and different configurations based upon what people want at different price points. So they have a small 2.3-inch device that's low-end that's selling for, what was it, $150, $199? You know,
yeah.
And then they have like a 3.4-inch device. Then they have a 4.3. They have a 7-inch. They're also going to do a 10.1, I believe, too. You know, I kind of like what they're doing. Hopefully, they don't mess it up this time, because I know the first time they did a tablet, there was definitely some deficiencies that people bitching about. The biggest one being you couldn't install any applications. The the marketplace wasn't in there.
I don't know if it is in there or not now still. But I posted into the group, and let me see if I can find the, there was an unboxing of the 10-inch one, and it looks really nice. I have to pull that up and put that in the IRC, but it'll take some time. I mean, it'll yeah. In some ways I agree with Google, in some ways I don't, when they say that Android 2.2 is not tailored for tablets. They're saying that I think it's either 2.3 or the rumored next version after Gingerbread is Honeycomb. They're saying that those releases are going to be more tablet oriented. They'll still
what
have
I
still be on a phone, probably.
Is Gingerbread.
Huh?
It is Gingerbread.
Is it Gingerbread?
Have... Right.
I'm not sure about that, but either way, I mean, I don't really think it's that big a deal, because here's the cool thing about Android. It doesn't matter what Google says. If a manufacturer wants to make an Android tablet, and Samsung did, they're going to do it, whether Google thinks it's a good idea or not. And that's why Android is really a better overall operating system. We don't have to wait for Google to come out with their release for Android for tablets. So, and thankfully the manufacturers aren't waiting either.
You know, when I look at these devices and I compare it to the tablet I have, and, you know, and the tablet from Neuros, it's not bad, and I gave a review on it, but, and I use it, I do use it quite frequently for an e-book reading. The thing is, I come back to the point, I mean, playing Alchemy on it was alright. The touchscreen isn't that responsive. You know, I'm reading some reviews from the other type of tablets in the price range, and it's the same thing over and over again. You know, it's running 1.6, there's some serious limitations in the market unless you root the device. They're slow, and the touchpad responsiveness is iffy. And again, granted, this is like the first generation of these devices, but if you're going something right. like, you know, something that's going to be almost useful for like $399+, that is closer to like the phone that you have, like the phone I have, and the phone my daughter has, even the G1. Is like a lot faster than the $100 tablet, and so it is a nice experience. It's not as nice an experience, and it's almost like taking a step backwards. And I look at this and I say, if I'm going to dump like $300-$400 just for a tablet, you know, and I'm saying, well, yeah, I'm going to use it as an e-reading device primarily, and it's nice to carry around with me. But on the flip side, if I'm going to spend that kind of money, I might as well just get a netbook or a low-end laptop. You know, and I could have a lot more functionality. And then, you know, what do I want this for? Primarily e-book reading. I might as well get a Kindle or a Nook or something. Yeah, granted, those are like one-trick pony devices. That's all they do. But,
That's why I like what Arco seems to want to be doing. You know, they're offering all different sizes, all different configurations,
right.
at all different prices. You get what you want and spend how much you want. You know,
well,
the low end one I think is like $99.
Yeah.
The 2.8, which is a small
right.
device.
And that one actually has it. The idea of it being used as a media playing device primarily, and not video, mostly audio.
Right.
So I mean,
right.
it's
I mean,
basically
you look
their
at the
next
the 7,
step
I think,
replayer.
Is the flagship one, and
kind of
the price
it's in the
on
middle.
That. It's pretty nice.
What is the price
but
on that?
On the 7, there's two prices, I think. They're offering different configurations. Hold on, let me pull it up here.
They don't have the 101 or the 70 on Amazon yet.
Because, like,
the
2.8,
the
3.2? Yeah.
The 7, I think, is going to be... Rather, the 70... Where the hell is it?
Yeah, it's a 70. That's what the 7 is. The old 7. You don't want
the
to
old
look
one.
At
yeah,
that.
You want the 70, which is the neuro designation. I think they're going to offer two prices.
I've been playing with.
What do you want to say, Dave?
Tablets that are out there right now, and one of the ones that I had the most hope for initially was the Huawei tablet or Huawei tablet. And after getting my hands on that for about 5 minutes at a Best Buy, that thing sucks. Its response is slow. The Dell
gotta have resist the screen
does,
then.
The Dell
yeah,
Street,
none of the low-end tablets have been that good. It's kind of disappointing.
The Dell
That's
Street
why I'm hoping
seems
maybe...
to be, like, one of the best so far. But the one that really surprised me when I was going through a Staples earlier today was... the Android tablet that HP includes with one of their multifunction printers, of all things.
You see creative you in an Android tablet, too.
And this HP multifunction printer is like $400 with the tablet.
Right. Creative has one now, too. I think it's based on their... the same processor they used in their Z Eggs device that they sold.
And right, right
they don't
now,
have any pricing.
But, yeah, they don't. I think it's $259. They were offering with I think it's an 8 gig storage. I think that one's $259. And they can offer a 250 gig one for like $400. I think that's the price.
With Creative?
No, the Arcos.
Or Arcos. Okay.
The 70.
What was that?
Let me see if I can. Let me pull up the email.
You know, I have to say though, when I look at these Arcos, I can't see. For me, again, I'm speaking personally. I can't see the benefit of the 2.8, the 3.2, and the 4.3 tablets because I already have an Android phone.
Now that's you, Dan. There's people out there
that
don't have like a. So the 7 would be nice, or the 10.
But then again, I mean, looking at the 7 that they have now, it's $200. Now I'm assuming that the price
there
range
is.
There
it is.
Right,
I got the prices.
All
right. The 70 with 8 gig of storage is going to be $274.
That's one with
250 gig, $350. That's a great price for 250 gig.
Yes.
Hard drive.
I can see what you're saying, but then again, I'm back to that whole thing. If I'm going to invest that much money or dump that much money on a device, I don't know.
$274 is not bad at all.
And here's the Creative Zio from Creative Labs. They're still around.
Are you posting a link to it?
Yeah, I put it in IRC already.
You put it in the wrong IRC.
Oh, I did. I'm here. Hold on.
Yeah, you did.
Here. Sorry about that.
Oh, there we go.
There's this, again, resistive screen. I understand keeping the price down, but come on. If Apple can do it, so can you. So can everyone else. Let's get
The 70's on pre-order.
Right.
And I think they're shipping by the end of the month. I put a link in there for the Arcos store. For the two
models, Apple can do it, but you're paying for that too. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Right.
That's not a bad deal though. You know, the Samsung Galaxy Tab, you have to get a contract with that, or you pay through the lungs. I mean, that thing's going to be $600 if you don't get a contract. They don't offer Wi-Fi only one. Not yet.
They will be, but it's going to be after the first of the year. So.
I really want to see this Arcos in person when they ship. The 7
me too.
And I want to see what these things are like. It looked nice.
I bet you Best Buy
will
have it. Best Buy will have
probably. They've carried Arcos stuff before.
Yep. The bad part is, from a blogger standpoint, I can't even get a hold of any of their marketing people to just try and get a review unit in. I mean, it's not like I want to keep it. I'll send it back, you know. But I just can't ever get a hold of anybody.
Yeah.
And which is unfortunate, because I think it's something you really should look at.
The whole thing with all these devices, even if they're really nice devices, they really have to freaking advertise the shit out of them. People are just not going to know about it. The only people who are going to know these things
are
going to be people like, you know, me and you.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to have TV commercials.
Well, you know, they have to advertise them. They actually have to bring them out in the United States.
Yeah. but it sounds like this is going to be available through the major web stores. And I would hope it's carried like in a major electronics chain, you know, like Best Buy or the Buy More.
Anyway, well, it's 10:18, guys.
All right. Anything else for the week? You know, what I do want to ask is, do we know if who set up the date, the event with Nathan Lowell?
I did.
Is he confirmed for the 24th?
No, he hasn't. Why, you want somebody else to know?
No, because I'm not going to be here the 24th. That's the only problem.
So you don't want to do a show on the 24th?
I could have it all set up, but I'm not going to be here. I'm going to be... I can have the streaming servers all going, but somebody else is going to have to record it, and I'm going to be heading up to see my parents for Thanksgiving.
Right.
So, I don't know if we want to do a show, skip it, or reschedule him.
Right.
I don't want to drop him as a guest.
Yeah. Why don't we talk offline? We'll see whether or not we're going to do
all right.
Date.
Yeah.
If we have to move him, we'll move him.
All right. Anything else for the good of the show?
I'm good.
Next week.
Thank you. What?
Well, I was going to say, next week we got Ken McConnell, according to the calendar.
That's right.
Anyway. Science fiction writer and blogger.
Continuing our month of science fiction after a hiatus of a couple of weeks.
And Nathan Lowe, too, once we get him on.
Yeah.
There was a link that I posted earlier on Twitter I wanted to bring up real quick that no, you saw, Joel. I didn't know if anyone else saw that came from the Gardner group.
Yeah, about Android is number 2 behind Nokia.
Now, is that total market share?
And over iOS.
Sales?
Yes.
Symbian is the number 1 player in the game, followed by Android, with iPhone being a significant difference below Android.
That's outstanding.
It's all lies. It's all lies. Don't believe a lot of it.
So it's just nice to see, you know, numbers backing, you know, what most of us thought already.
What, having 30 phones on 4 different carriers is better than having 1 phone on 1 sucky carrier?
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't sound very logical.
That one sucky carrier does pretty good for me on, you know, that, good phone operating system.
Oh, that's right. You have a Captivate now, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm...
No, is that the Samsung?
Watching,
yeah.
The Samsung Galaxy S.
Yeah, that's a nice phone.
Okay.
That's a nice phone.
Yeah, I am just waiting for a vanilla ROM to hit. There's a couple different efforts going on over at the XDA dev forums, but nothing solid yet.
We'll make it. We'll do it. Just take
Samsung's
time.
Samsung's doing nice stuff. Not just phones, man. I have a killer nice HDTV from Samsung. And I love that TV. It's great. Good stuff from them.
All right, let's pack this up.
Yeah,
let's do it, man.
Before Link cries. Next week we have. I just closed it, didn't I?
Ken McConnell.
Yeah, Ken McConnell. So be here. For science fiction. Alright. Yeah, I'm going to play us out. No closing song tonight. Just the usual stuff. So have a great week. Thank you. Thank you, Lord D. Thanks, Dave Yates.
Good boy.
Oh, you're welcome.
Good boy.
Thank you for all you do, sir. Both things.
Dave DM 68.
Love you, Dave. Alright, thanks, Pat. And here it is.
Have a good one.
The closing.
What I want from you, I want you to be the same. That is what you will do. You will spoon feed the news, the same technology news to everyone. You will not help people. You will not give them tips. You are not unique. You will conform. No, we won't. Join the revolution in Augcast. Listen to the GNU World Order. For more info, go to www.thebadapples.info.
Can we talk about the new sets of computers?
Can we talk about multiprocessing?
Can we talk about bandwidth clusters?
Can we talk about Web 2.0?
Just talk geek for me.
Just talk geek for me.
Hey, it's PP.
please come check out my podcast for my take on all things geeky. You can find us at www.talkgeektome.us. That's www.talkgeektome.us. Thank you.
Just talk geek to me.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
It's over. Daddy has a big gun.
Daddy's got an ass full of gas, too. You know what showed up at our doorstep yesterday?
Microsoft Kinect.
No. No. Something a little more voracious. A kitten.
Really?
Not so much a kitten. It's probably like 8 or 9 months old, but it has come in. Yeah, it came in and ate food, drank some water, and made itself at home. What? No peeing on the router, but it is just... No. But it has made itself at home now. No.
It's not a router peeing kitty.
Nope. He's a sweetheart, though.
What's his name?
Doesn't have a name yet, because we're trying to figure out whether or not it's somebody's in the neighborhood. Yeah, we're going to eat it. No, we're trying to figure out if it's
dinner.
A neighborhood cat or what.
Take it to the Chinese restaurant.
What's wrong with you? It's a cat. It's you love it. You don't eat it.
Not Chinese.
Meow.
If you go to a Chinese restaurant and you hear meowing coming from the back kitchen, walk out.
Why?
It's
what if you've eaten there before and the food's good?
It's the sudden end to a meow. Then you might want to worry.
Uh-huh.
Meow. Meow.
Kitty. That reminds me, I probably should go let the cat out of my son's room. Poor cat gets locked in there every night. Because he wants his bedroom door
in there?
Closed. Huh?
Does the cat then end up crapping in there, or you can hold it?
She's really good, actually. She doesn't crap in there.
Good.
So, I mean, she but I'll wake up in the morning, I'm getting ready for work, and I hear this, meow, meow, meow. This is the same cat whose bowl could be full, and she'll meow at you because she don't have enough food in her bowl, or she thinks that she doesn't have enough food. So you just walk up to her bowl, fluff the food up, and she's okay.
So your cat's a porn star when it comes to food?
Yeah. Has to look perfect.
Man, I love cats, but when they get angry, man, when they get pissed at you, they like to piss on your things.
Yes,
at least
do.
My cats do. Really.
I've
you
never
know when
heard
they're
anybody
angry.
Have that problem with you.
Well,
you have a cat, Dave?
I have 4 cats, but they all live outside. 3 cats.
Well, that's why you don't have the problem.
That's right.
Those cats are supposed to live outside.
Yep. What about a dog?
I got 1 dog, and it lives outside, too.
I wish mine lived outside.
And when Dave does wrong, he lives outside, too.
It's not happening
in the doghouse.
Why do you think he has such a big truck?
That's it.
He's got a camper shell.
He's
got
to carry his attitude.
A nice, comfy bed. It would be nice to have a camper on it.
Yeah, then you wouldn't have to pay for the room itself, huh?
We could all sleep in Davey Yates' camper.
In his backyard.
Yeah,
Carolina barbecue, though, you got to get some of those, man.
Spoon you.
Dave's a good spooner. Just ask 330.
Yeah. Mr. Stinky Feet.
A couple other things I didn't mention about things we've got going with ILF right now is we actually have a Android app in the works. Actually, it's pretty much done for the schedule. And
Dan is looking at what we've got in place now and seeing what he can do to expand it.
How many people y'all got in your organizing group? Three or four or more or what?
Just three. And I'm doing, because of how busy the other guys are, I'm doing the majority of the heavy lifting right now.
I think he's going to need more.
Well,
he's a young man.
We're going to have three. We'll probably keep it for a few, at least this year, only three on the board, and then just have a volunteer staff from there. And I've got a couple volunteers recruited already for a couple different things, like Richard Quirin for graphics.
He's the obvious choice, isn't he?
Yep.
Yeah, it's a toss-up between him and Fab.
Fab?
Well, I just saw that Fab had done a logo for Northeast Linux Fest.
Oh, yeah?
Which I hope it was, a penguin taking a shit on the planet Jupiter.
Yeah. Excuse me. Huh. Five guys kicking back, man.
Dr. Pepper.
It's good, man.
Did you see where they've already written drivers, Linux drivers for the Kinect camera, Dan?
Yeah. I did see that. What can you do with it?
I saw the $3,000 bounty for it, but I didn't know that someone had already gotten the driver completed.
Yeah, it is. Wasn't even out a week. That tells me Microsoft used a lot of out-of-the-shelf stuff for it.
But is it full functionality or just very, very basic at the point?
It's probably just a video driver, but I don't know, maybe not. Dan, you still on? Where'd Dan go?
I don't know.
He muted himself so he could go beat the kids.
Yeah. I'm going to have to read that Star Strikers book from the author that's going to be on next week. Sounds interesting.
I'm going to have to some point pick up a new ebook reader. On my Nook met an unfortunate demise.
What happened? Did you crunch it?
I had put it on I was out with at a friend's house, and there were a couple small kids running around, so I set it up on a bookshelf so little
Uh-oh.
Kids couldn't crunch it, and then
Uh-oh.
An adult knocked it off the bookshelf.
See, now you can go spend the money on a new color.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'm really content with the e-ink stuff.
Yeah.
I like having the read, the extended read times on it.
Battery life.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Battery life's everything.
And I've been hearing some really bizarre rumors about what the price is going to happen, or what's going to happen to the price of the Kindle DX when it hits Best Buy and Staples and whoever else.
What, they're saying about 300?
I've actually been hearing some mumblings of like 200 bucks.
That'd be worth it. The DX is nice. It's better for reading things like PDFs on it, because PDF on Kindle, it will render the full screen, the full 8.5 by 11 sheet in the 6-inch screen first. You can zoom in on it, but it kind of sucks when you do.
The Nook had done pretty good with PDFs from the few I'd tried on it, with a few exceptions on things. Like, I tried the Asterix, the second edition Asterix book, mm-hmm. and most of it rendered great, except for, like, the table of contents.
Yeah. I'm kind of a little bit surprised that nobody has done one oriented around the Bible yet. Maybe a dedicated Bible reading e-reader, or at least a way to improve the Bibles themselves, because they kind of stink for searching Bible references up. You can't type in like a book chapter verse and do a search for it. That kind of stinks.
That's more an issue of how the versions of the Bible out there have been formatted, I'm sure.
Well, it's an indexing issue is what it is. They don't have an index built for that. And that would also probably make the book a lot bigger, too. The Bibles I've found, anyway, are some of the bigger e-books out there, because it's just a massive tome anyway. But...
And there's one other company who's got an Android-based ebook reader out right now. Pantech Digital.
It's a piece of shit.
I haven't even seen a functioning demo unit yet, so...
It's at Kmart, so you won't see a functioning demo unit.
Best Buy had one, too.
Did they? Yeah, from what I'm understanding, it's basically an Android tablet with a resistive touchscreen. So it's kind of like a cheap thing.
And I tried the Kobo recently. That actually worked better than I thought it would.
Yeah, Kobo's actually gotten some good press. Not great press, but good press. So... We have the one girl that writes for Gear Diary. She's like our ebook expert. Whenever we want to ask something about ebooks, we ask her, because she knows it all. She hangs around the e-reading forums, and she had one of those Kamanji Android tablets. Have you seen that one yet?
No.
It's a little older one. And technically, it was the first tablet, too.
And I'll still say, anyone who's looking at the Nook, don't bother with the 3G version. It's just not worth it. Unless you're going to take the effort to... As of right now, it's not worth the effort. Bypass the 3G and get the Wi-Fi only version. Unless you want to take the effort to do the work it takes to put a new SIM in there.
I like having one with 3G myself. But
well,
ooh, actually they got a new, that's a new Kamanji they have there.
I've got an ebook library, Joel, of about 2,400 books right now.
How many of those did you buy from BNN? Did you buy a bunch of them from there?
I did not buy a single book from BNN. They're all unencrypted EPUB format.
Ah.
Which How do you figure Mobi is more open than EPUB, by the way?
I don't. It's just what the Kindle supports right now.
Okay, because I was listening to an episode of Tech Show earlier today, and it sounded like you were saying Mobi was in more open format than EPUB.
Well, Mobi is like you can convert. Like for example, I just downloaded the lit version of that Star Strikers book from Kim McConnell, and I used Calibre to convert it to Mobi. So you can put DRM on really any format, EPUB as well, but.
Well, yeah, it's.
I only use it because I have to. I'd actually rather have an AKW because they render a little bit better on the Kindle. So.
I don't know that format.
Yeah, AKW is the Android. It's the Amazon's format. So. You buy a book on their website. That's.
And maybe that's just a encrypted Mobi file.
It's different. I've looked at it.
Oh, okay.
Just a little bit different than the other ones. It's actually, I think they are actually trying to make it, make the Calibre support making it unencrypted AKW. Which is possible. So, it's just a document format, you know.
Yeah.
Let me see. Let's see here if I can convert.
I'm going to stop the recording. Say goodnight, Joel.
Goodnight, Joel.
Testing. 1, 2, 3. Hello? Testing. 1, 2, 3. Is this good?
Ah.
Alright, that should be good.
This is better though. Who's this man? Oh!
Wow!
Wow. Is nobody here? Nobody here but me. Testing. Kitty. Gas. Ow. Damn server. I wonder. Poor old the book of love. Boom chicka boom chicka boom chicka boom chicka boom. Testing. Testing.
Well,
you sound perfect. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, absolutely.
Good, good. Can you hear the server fan?
I hear only you. I don't good. Hear any. Okay.
I don't want you to hear the server fan.
Okay.
That's a good thing.
Okay.
I'm waiting for a few other people to join us.
Yeah.
And we're going to get the show started.
How is going to work? How long is it's going to take?
It can take about a half an hour. Is that okay?
Okay. Yeah. Absolutely. Are you asking questions, or are there going to be people asking questions?
There will be approximately two or three other people on the show, and we will all be asking you questions.
Okay.
So, and we also have an IRC channel, too, if you are interested in connecting to that. That is, you would point your IRC client to my server at thelinuxlink.net and join Pound Tech Show if you would want to. And sometimes we'll take, we'll have questions that are in the IRC that we may ask you to.
I usually use Freenet, so I should probably disconnect for this network.
You don't have to disconnect. You could just connect to another. Just connect to another server in your client.
Yeah. And so, which is the one that I have to connect?
It's the server name is thelinuxlink.net.
I'm not really comfortable with IRC, so it's...
Yeah, and you don't have to be on the IRC channel either. More often than not, there's a bunch of yahoos in there talking about things that aren't related to what is going on the show, too. So it's not absolute necessity. If there's a question that comes up, we will ask it.
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing, Pat?
I'm good.
Pat, this is Italio.
Hey, Italo.
Hi.
Am I pronouncing your name right, Italo?
Actually, in Italian, it's Italo, so you have to put the accent on the starting I. But I understand that for English-speaking people, it's somehow difficult. So you can call me whatever you want. I mean, it's...
Come on, we'll practice. Italo.
Italo.
Italo. Italo is perfect, absolutely. You know, in French, I'm Italo. In Italian, I'm Italo. And in English, I'm Italo. So it changes according to language.
I'll try to remember Italo. That shouldn't be too hard.
Don't worry. I mean, I'm used to any pronunciation. That's not a real problem.
You used to ignorant Americans butchering your name.
You know, it's Italian is such a niche language that we really cannot force people to know how it's spoken.
Italo, where are you? Where do you live in Italy?
Yes, I live just close to Milan, so it's just south of Milan, which is northern Italy.
I have friends in Italy. I have friends outside of Roma. Nah.
Actually, Rome is a lot better, but it's not good for business, or it's, let's say, is. It's like Washington D.C., so it's just federal business, not industry.
Right. All the government's there, right?
Yeah, exactly. Hi.
How am I sounding, Dan? Or Pat?
You can turn yourself up just a hair. Italo. Italo.
Hi.
No, I pronounced that wrong again. No.
No, it's okay. It's absolutely okay.
Italo. Italo would be the wrong way. Italo would be the right way, correct?
Exactly.
Italo. This is Joel. Joel, this is Italo.
Hello,
hi.
Italo.
Hi.
Italo, this is David. How are you?
Fine. I'm quite fine. It's quite nice. It's mid of the night here in Italy, but I drank a lot of Italian coffee, so I'm rather away.
Ooh, that's good stuff, too.
Sounds good.
Espresso, right?
Yeah. No, we don't have... I mean, We don't have any other kind of coffee. You know that Starbucks is, Italy is the only country where Starbucks has not even decided to open a single shop because it's so difficult.
Kind of pointless.
Our coffee is so different that
it would suck.
They would probably, yeah, I mean, you know, it's just different.
I don't like Starbucks.
It's another story.
It's weak.
I don't like it.
It's weak. I've had a great coffee. There's a micro roaster here, and they do a phenomenal job. Satisfied every time I go in there. Coffee should have stuff on top.
My favorite gift to get from Italy is those little coffee pots. Those are the best ones. The little silver ones with the black handles. Those are awesome. I love those things.
Yeah, I'm old school. I'd like to get a La Pavoni to have here in the house, but they're like $400 or $500. I used to be really into espresso. I still am, but I just can't afford it. $9 for a pound of coffee.
Yeah, that's it's very expensive. It's not expensive in Italy. I mean, it's
no.
But I think it depends from how much you get right. You use it.
Right.
Well, most of the coffee in Europe comes from where? Africa, right?
No.
Colombia, too.
I mean,
yes.
We get most of our stuff from Colombia and Brazil.
Arabica.
Yeah, we too, also. Yeah, Arabica, yes.
Mm-hmm. Leave that Robusto junk in the jungle where it belongs. Yeah, I like it. Although, it's okay in a pinch.
How about that stuff from Vietnam where they the beans
monkeys?
Are eaten by this... No, they're not monkeys. They're some kind of a... what are they? More like a raccoon type of creature. It eats them and then it craps them out. And then you get the local people up there picking the remnants out of the poop. And they sell it and people make a coffee out of it. I mean,
coffee,
I love coffee,
poop, monkeys.
But... That sounds disgusting. Let me get a link for that.
One I've always wanted to try, I just never have, is Jamaican Blue Mountain. It's only grown on a mountain in Jamaica. And it costs, last I checked, it was between $37 and $40 a pound. But the main reason that is because 97% of the crop of Jamaican Blue Mountain goes to Japan. They love it. It's supposed to be the best. But I don't think so. From what I've tried of it. I've tried little sips, but not an espresso shot or anything.
I'm not a coffee drinker, but my wife is, and she said that Jamaican Blue Mountain or whatever it's called. It wasn't... I think she liked Dominican coffee better than it.
Yeah. I haven't never got into drinking the single origins like they talk. That's real heavy in the coffee industry. Coffee that only comes from one place and doesn't have any other beans blended into it from other places. I'm running Fedora 14 tonight, guys.
Here it is. Coffee Luwak. It's the stuff it's called. And it's made from coffee berries, which have been eaten by the Asian palm civet. It says, other related civets then pass through its digestive tract. The civet eats the berries
for the
fleshy pulp. And then the stomach, the enzymes slip into the beans, making shorter peptides and more free amino acids. Passing through the intestines, the beans are then defecated. They make this in Sumatra, Indonesia, the Philippines, and Vietnam. Coffee Luwak, it's called. I don't know. That sounds disgusting. I think I'll pass on that.
That sounds like coffee poop.
It is.
Yep. I think it's about start time, isn't it?
Yeah, we're going to be starting in just a minute. Hold on. I'm just trying to get this to come through.
I'm off work tomorrow. Veterans Day. We are closed.
You're lucky. Everybody else got
the damn straight. And I just had a Five Guys burger and fry.
Do you have a large fry?
I got that up there.
Oh, yes, we do.
Yeah, we got them down here. Tastes good stuff.
Yeah, I had a I had a little burger with grilled onions, mushrooms, A1, and just a regular fry. That's a ton of fries. A regular fry's a ton.
Oh, yeah.
And the large is a crap ton.
Yep.
They are good, though. Ain't nobody daddy, is that a Lincoln Bass? Fantastic promo, by the way, Dan.
Thank you. Let me get this going here.
Now I need to record a show so I can actually play it.
Alright, dude, that's good, right? Well, there we go. I don't want to blow everybody's head off.
That's good.
You ever complain all the time? It's too loud. It's too loud.
Listen to the freaking podcast if you want levelated.
Alright.
Do you even do that anymore?
I do. Not levelator. I don't use levelator. I use my own tools. Alright, let's get the show on the road, because it's late over there for...
Sweet.
Italo. Did I pronounce that right?
Italo.
Italo.
Italo. That's Italo. Right. Why do I want to be ignorant American
Italy,
tongue?
Not Italy.
Italo. Alright.
Exactly.
We're going to play the intro, then we're going to introduce you, Italo, and then we're going to get right into it.
Okay.
Sweet.
So we can get you on and get you... Get you to bed.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, everybody, here we go.